Hello and welcome back to another episode of Open Floor. I'm Andrew Sharp, and on the other line, still in Las Vegas, Ben Golliver. What's up, man?
Still kicking, man. It's actually been a great run. We had some unbelievable summer league playoff games. I know that sounds really desperate. We've had some fun at USA basketball practices. The hype is real around Kevin Durant. I'm still, you know, in motion, I guess. I haven't been, you know, heat stroked out yet. So I'm happy. I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm good, man. Whatever it takes to stay alive out there. This podcast is mostly just sort of a proof of life situation after 2 weeks in Vegas. Want to make sure everything's still working okay. So what, you leave tonight, right?
Well, the hostage takers have been getting increasingly desperate, and I hope you have the money together to save me. I'm out of here pretty soon, and then heading back with USA Basketball to get to LA for the exhibition there, then up to Oakland for, you know, Kevin Durant's Oracle debut as a member of the Warriors with Team USA, which is going to be just ridiculously hype. So the end is in sight, but we're not quite there yet. But yeah.
Okay, well, good. So what do you want to talk about first? Should we talk about the end of Summer League, the heart-pounding action of the Summer League playoffs?
You know, I think we should, just because there were some prospects that came on a little bit over the course of the week. I mean, everybody loves to write, like, the who are the best players of Summer League posts after, like, the first 2 days, and that usually is true. But this was a great example of why that can kind of be misleading, because, like, Chris Dunn was unreal the first two games, and then he didn't play at all after that because of the injury. Same thing with Devin Booker. You know, he comes out blasting, looks like, you know, a future all-star in the first two games, and then they shut him down. You can go on and on with guys like Trey Lyles. So
basically the players who make it clear that they are NBA players and NBA starters are removed quickly from Summer League action. So we're talking about, like, the real Summer League heroes, like Nate Robinson with his jersey retired in Cox Pavilion Summer League right now.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I think, you know, another undersized guard who really stood out over the course of the week, I think he's one of your favorites, Tyler Ulis. I mean,
talk to the people about Ulis.
Yeah. So, I mean, he had obviously the game winning jumper, which was on a great inbounds play where he kind of, you know, puts it in, they give it right back to him. And so that was sort of the signature highlight. But this guy was just rock solid all week long. He had a really rough last game when they got eliminated from the semifinals. And yes, I realize I'm talking about this like it matters. Just everyone bear with me here.
This is so, 2 weeks deep in Vegas for Golliver.
This is 100% Stockholm syndrome. So that's fine. But solid defense, especially for a player his size, you know, really good assist to turnover ratio, a great feel in the half court in terms of getting to his spots. People just could not really stick to him off the dribble. You know, he's just great at creating space, getting to those mid-range jumpers.
Yeah.
So there's just a lot to like in terms of what's his ceiling. I mean, obviously, I think most people see him, best case scenario, probably like a third guard, right?
Yeah.
But he did everything you could possibly want from a guy with his physical profile to prove that he belonged on the NBA level. I don't know if there was people really, you know, strongly doubting that. I didn't follow the stories that closely when he was coming into the league, but I think he really impressed a lot of people.
Yeah, I think the big question with him, and one of the reasons that he started to slide a little bit, was his health. I think there were rumors of a hip condition, but ultimately, I mean, anywhere, like, his value anywhere from 20 to 40 was going to be as a third guard. And I love that he landed with Phoenix, where he's reunited with Devin Booker, who he was boys with last year on the Karl Towns Kentucky team. And so I just think that he makes their fun group a lot better and gave them an advantage. He gave them an advantage in Summer League because most of those teams don't have a point guard. Like, you look at the teams who do well in these settings, and there's usually a guard who can run the team. I think I have not really been watching, but I know that Minnesota was doing really well, and Tyus Jones is probably a big reason why, because, like, if you have someone that can run the team and keep everyone going, then you're automatically in better shape than like 80% of the other teams out there.
Oh, totally. And you know, they made it to the finals, almost won the whole thing. Tyus Jones was sort of the regular season Summer League MVP, which, you know, again, take with that what you will. I mean, it's definitely a grain of salt. But
can you take me real quick, though, before we get into the finals? You sent me the ballot for the summer league teams. Like who's voting in this? Is it just you and Kevin Pelton?
No, so Kevin Pelton, not to call him out, but I don't know. I didn't see him all 14 days. I mean, I think he took off about day 8 or 9. No, Kevin's one of my really good friends. It was great to see him in Vegas, but there wasn't very many people left by the end of it.
Is it like you and 6 other people?
Yeah, no, I think that the people who are doing it, a lot of times it's like the broadcasters, you know, because now it's on ESPN, NBA TV. Right. So I think they get those guys in there. I actually really like to vote. I like to vote way too much. I kind of pored over my selections. I was a little disappointed that my picks weren't the actual picks. So yeah, I take it too seriously. So but
what were your picks though?
Well, you know, I published them on SI.com. I can pull them up if you want to fill like 30 seconds.
this is terrible radio. We apologize. All right. Well, so what do you, did Ulis make first team? That's really all I'm asking.
No, he did not make the first team. He made the second team, which I actually thought was fair because I took it a little bit differently than I think other people did in that I was taking anyone who played at least 2 games. So to me, Booker like stood out so far and above a lot of these other guys in just terms of overall impact and skill level that I felt like, hey, even though you're only there for a weekend, we got to give him. But my first team was Jordan McRae of the Cavaliers. I mean, that guy's just kind of a pure bucket getter. So, and he just was on fire basically for most of the week. Norman Powell with the Raptors was a great all around player. I mean, that dude is really, really good. I think, you know, you look at Ben Simmons, was on my list as well. Another guy who was a sort of a late breakout, was Bobby Portis from the Bulls, you know, and we've joked about how poor their summer went, right? I mean, they had a pretty rough summer. I think Bobby Portis is like the shining star of their summer that's basically going to save it from being a complete disaster because this dude just turned into a knockdown three-point shooter. Like he was like a 30% three-point shooter, hardly ever put up shots last year as a rookie.
Yeah.
He could not miss. He's like Kyle Korver out there banging in the corner threes, the angle threes, pick and pop threes. So on a team that really is going to need spacing, I think he makes a lot of sense for them.
What did you what did you think of their Brazilian? Is it Cristiano Feliciano?
Yeah, well, it's Felicio, which doesn't make sense. And he should really change it because it should be Feliciano. And I'm not trying to like tell him what his name should be, but he really should make it a little bit more logical.
Okay.
Well, he's big and physical. You know, unfortunately, he got nutmegged and that's always bad. And actually, I encourage people to watch the nutmegging video by Jonathan Simmons in slow motion because he realizes it after the ball's all the way through his legs. And there's just this horrible moment of realization like, oh, God, that just happened. And then you can just see his shoulders slump. And it's like sort of a little part of him dies on that play. So I highly encourage a real close watching of the vine.
Do you think that dude can be a starter?
I don't know about that. But I think the big takeaway for Chicago, it's Portis, because I think Portis can be the starter this year. I would play him at the starting four. You desperately need space. You know he's going to bring energy, a defensive intensity, and all of the things that he sort of became known for, you know, the crazy eyes sort of stereotype as a rookie. Like, to me, plug him in at the four. You know, him and Jimmy, that's, you know, a pretty nice pairing in terms of the front court. And you're going to have somebody who can shoot from outside. And if it's not going to be Rondo, it's not going to be Wade. So if you can get something from that four spot, go for it.
Yeah, it's too bad. First of all, I know I have a handful of Bulls friends and they all love the Brazilian Cristiano. And I've never quite seen it, but I know he had a decent 10 days in Vegas. So, you know, keep that going. But I like you just look at that roster, you look at Portis and you look at it, whether you buy in on Felicio or not, like it just would have made so much sense to flip Jimmy Butler for like a Chris Dunn type. And it's got to hurt watching Chris Dunn look so good for the Wolves because it really would have made sense to reset and just be kind of a young sort of rebuilding team this year that's still fun to root for and then build with next year's pick as well.
Okay, so here's another one of these conspiracy theories for you because I know you love the sneaker conspiracies, right?
Yeah.
So this plays into what you're saying, though. So with Jimmy and the trade talk, right? So Jimmy, I think, was coming into the summer under the impression, like all of us, that he was going to be the guy, right? Like it was going to be all retooled around him. Obviously, that's not happening. But when you look at the Jordan brand, like their list of athletes, like who's the next up for like a signature sneaker, right? Like who's the next up to really be pushed hard? Like it's not going to be Kawhi Leonard. Like that dude doesn't talk. And, you know, you can imagine Kawhi's like next Jordan commercial is going to be like a black and white silent film like Charlie Chaplin. Like that's going to be how they have to market them. You know, like what else do you do with them?
What Jordan shoes do they make?
So they have, so Melo and CP3 have sort of been like the main signature guys. And then Blake was kind of in the mix there a little bit too. But you're always looking for like, what's next? Like who's the next guys coming up to be those, the signature guys. Also Westbrook has been a main guy for them too. But you know, if it's Jimmy, I think Jimmy just makes a lot more sense for them than like LaMarcus or Kawhi Leonard, but does he make sense as like a signature face of the Jordan brand when he's, you know, one of three ball dominant options on Chicago? Like, I don't know. So I wonder, you know, if the Bulls are serious about this whole Dwayne Wade thing, and if they're serious about this whole Rondo thing, and they're really going to run this out, like at what point, if you're Jimmy, are you like, look, you guys kind of are holding me back here. Like, wouldn't he have a bigger profile if he went to be sort of the best wing or like the premier, you know,
yeah, lead balls?
Or another team. I mean, I just kind of feel like he needs to stay in play when we talk about these trade situations, because Chicago didn't do anything to sort of help his life or sort of help, you know, build his star brand. And, you know, people are going to scoff at that and say, oh, he should just be a team player. And yeah, of course, that's how, you know, guys look at it too. But there is a business side to things. And you know, I wouldn't be, you know, shocked at all if there's people already saying like, hey, we got to kind of position him a little differently on a different squad.
For sure. For sure. I also think if he was sort of a malcontent last year, you've brought in people who are now going to be, I mean, Rondo is like, presents all the basketball chemistry problems that Rose did, except he's also kind of a notorious asshole. So that's going to make things more interesting, bringing Wade in. Like, if Jimmy was unhappy last year, I give him another 4 months before we start to hear more rumors about him wanting out or unhappy with Hoiberg or whatever. And, you know, like when you talk about market, the one market that never gets credit in these discussions is Boston. Like, I feel like they're on the East Coast, and you could, I mean, the Northeast corridor there still makes a huge dent in terms of influence. And I think that people think of Boston as like an undesirable place, I guess, because it's cold and extremely white. But I don't know. I think if you were looking for a market for him, for Jimmy to sort of take the next step, like Boston would be a good spot.
Yeah, they'd sell a lot of green jerseys. There's no question about that. Hey, speaking of Boston,
hold on. He's also friends with Mark Wahlberg, so that maybe this is all destiny.
You think Mark Wahlberg is just playing the long game with Jimmy?
I think that could be it. This is all like part of a 3 or 4 year Wahlberg Danny Ainge master plan.
Danny Ainge is like, look, the Tom Brady last minute pitch at the Hamptons didn't work with KD, so we got to take a bigger picture approach. Mark Wahlberg, like, we're calling you to become Jimmy's best friend.
They actually are, I think, best friends. It's really weird, and I still want to read like a long form investigation into how this happened and what it's like with the two of them.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard him talk a little bit about it. I mean, it basically comes down to the fact that they're just both grinders, and there's like nothing gets in the way of it. Like they, for whatever reason, they just have very similar personalities in terms of work ethic, and that's kind of what drew them together. Hey, but real quick on the Celtics though, another guy from Summer League who, you know, started slow and didn't get a lot of attention, then really came on as the week went, was Jaylen Brown. You know, and I know he was polarizing when the pick was made, but I mean, this guy looked pretty good, especially defensively. I mean, all the stuff that people were talking about, his physical tools, you know, quickness, strength at his age, length. I mean, just prototypical for a wing. I think he's going to be, you know, really, really solid there. And then offensively, I thought from a physical standpoint, like he really transitioned to sort of the, you know, that pro level where he's taking contact and trying to get shots up. So he, you know, he gets the shooting fouls as he drives to the hoop. He's driving aggressively downhill to the basket, going both left and right. He didn't finish great. You know, he didn't shoot the ball very well from three pointers, as you know, you would expect, but there was, you know, enough to get people excited. And you know, he's always capable of that above the rim play. That stuff was there too. And I see him getting the knock like, oh, you know, maybe he's a Jeff Green type, you know, inconsistent. I can kind of see that. But I don't know. I thought he was doing stuff physically that no one else really from that rookie class was doing.
Just to be clear, Danny Ainge didn't pay you to say all this, right? To drive up trade value.
Oh no, not at all. But I would love him to be the centerpiece of a Westbrook trade, which I'm not sure. Have we talked about that? But I really do think that, that needs to happen. I mean, the Celtics need to trade for Westbrook.
Well, I really like Jaylen Brown. I think he, it's tough because on the wrong team, he really could have been in rough shape. Like he was sent to Sacramento in a lot of these mock drafts. He was going to go to Toronto. I think people had put him on the Nuggets. And I just feel like without great structure, he could have been in trouble. Because I think that's what we saw at Cal is like he was supposed to be the guy, and he just like he wasn't good enough to sort of create his own shot. They had awful spacing, and it was a rough situation. But put him in Boston and make his job like pretty simple these first few years, where he's just supposed to defend and then work on his jump shot over time, but isn't going to have to create a whole lot of offense for himself. And like, he's a real weapon with a high floor because his body alone, like makes him a weapon defending other wings. So, I mean, I totally agree with you in terms of his long-term prognosis with the Celtics. Now, if you pluck him off that team and throw him in Oklahoma City, where he's suddenly the heir to Russ and KD, it could be a little rougher.
It could be rough for sure. Hey, did he get comps to like Justice Winslow at all coming in? I know you follow that draft stuff better than
a little bit. Yeah. And my whole thing was basically like, if they can't trade for Jimmy Butler, then they can draft Jaylen Brown and try to build him into the next Jimmy Butler over the next 3 or 4 years, which I think like is the Justice Winslow, Kawhi, Jimmy Butler spectrum is some like Jaylen Brown will fall somewhere on that spectrum. And if I think Justice and Jaylen Brown are both have a ways to go in terms of shooting. And it's the one thing, like if Jaylen Brown can be a 40% 3-point shooter, like he's a 6 or 7 time All-Star. And if not, then he's still like a useful starter. But that's his ceiling will depend on that.
For sure. I think I'm not saying he's like Justice Winslow necessarily or like that close to it, but it's a similar concept where like you're saying with the structure around him, he had veteran pieces that he's going to, and he has the physical tools where like Winslow was a pretty instant impact guy in year one. Like I think more than maybe some people expected, especially defensive, like his defensive stats are unreal in terms of impact. And I could see Brown surpassing what people expect in the short term. For similar reasons to what Winslow was able to do last season. Other guy.
Go ahead.
I was going to say you were mentioning the importance of point guards leading offenses, and I had one more guy I thought we should talk about on that regard. Jamal Murray from Denver. I'm not sure exactly what his role is going to be as a rookie, just because they've already got some young guards they've taken in the lottery with Moutier and with Harris. But when you're looking at guys who have really good feel in the half court, who are very comfortable with the ball in their hands, I'm not sure he's the best playmaker for others, but this guy, again, really good in the pick and roll, comfortable, just going one-on-one off the dribble, has every shot in the book in terms of, you know, he's got some crazy stuff. I guess he worked with his dad on his jumper for years and years. You probably know this stuff better than I do, but yeah. I mean, he'll track down like a loose ball. His back will be 100%, 180 degrees to the basket, and he'll just do a complete 180 spin in the air and put up a perfect like form jump shot. And he just has these little tricks that you can tell he's just been a lifer in the gym. And I think, you know, longer term, when you're looking, you know, a year or two down the road, I'm not a big Harris guy. Some people in Vegas.
That's my question. First of all, you're right. I don't know. I forget the specifics of the Jamal Murray story, but I know that he was schooled by his dad, like, for years, and I think he's got some NBA bloodlines somehow, almost like a tennis kid, you know, where they just play year round. That was Jamal Murray, and he also reclassified to be draft eligible this year as opposed to next year, and I think went to Kentucky early, which was a brilliant business decision, because had he gone next year, I don't think he cracks like the top 15 next to all the guards that are going to be available. But obviously turned into a top 10 pick this year. And it's weird that we've hit this point in like basketball fandom where we start following like guys' birth years. It's the draft is getting a little creepy, but it worked out for Jamal Murray. And now my question is, you hit on it, like it's got to be a little awkward with Gary Harris, Emmanuel Mudiay, and Murray. They're all sort of thrown together, and I don't think they make sense together.
No, you can't play all three of them because they're just all kind of, none of them can really slide up to that three. I think Harris ultimately will probably be the odd man out. To me, he just kind of washes a little bit too often.
Yeah.
And I think his ceiling of those three guys is the lowest. I still like Mudiay a lot. I just wish he had played more in Vegas. I like his size and he's so young. To your point about the birth year thing, though, the other day someone was trying to tell me, oh yeah, Trey Lyles is still so young. And I was like, well, he's not that young. He's 20. And then I wanted to like punch myself in the face. Because he's 20. Like, give me a break. He's
basketball not 18. Has turned everyone into sociopaths. It's great.
It really has. Mudiay obviously has his faults too, right? But he's incredibly young, just like Murray. And I think Murray, that pairing is interesting because you're going to need spacing off Mudiay no matter who's playing alongside him. And this multiple playmakers, you know, the Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum model, or you just go around the league, you know, the Steph and Monte Ellis model from a few years back. I mean, that idea, I think, has a lot of merit to it if you have the right coach and if you're trying to play a certain way. And if I'm Denver, that seems like a pretty fun identity, right? Just turning those two guys loose, you know, you're playing at altitude, run people up and down. And live with it. So I think it's going to be
freaked out. I get freaked out by anyone who reminds me of Tyreek Evans and Emmanuel Mudiay. Like, his jumper is rough. He's incredibly physical and fast. And I mean, in that respect, like, I get it, but his decision making and his jumper like freaks me out. And as I consider myself a Nuggets enthusiast. I love Jokic, I love Nurkic, I love Gallinari, the OG of the squad. I even love like Wilson Chandler. Like, but it's a lot of this hinges on Mudiay.
Yeah, for sure. But I mean, you could also make this argument. I mean, Murray's a pretty nice hedge against Moutier's not developing.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's
like,
true.
Like, the problem with the Kings was they didn't have a backup plan. Once they turned the whole show over to Reek, it didn't work. And then it was like, well, what do we do now? We don't have a point guard for years. They try the Rondo thing, Collison. I mean, it was just kind of a mess. I think Murray, ultimately, you know, if Mudiay just doesn't ever figure it out, he doesn't find a way to be an impact guy, I think you could just say, okay, Murray, you're our de facto point guard. You're obviously going to shoot a lot more than you're going to pass, but at least we trust you with the ball in your hands.
Yeah.
So I think that could be another way to go. But those were some of the guys I thought kind of over the course of the summer league really, you know, stood out a little bit more than that early hype. Of course, guys like D'Angelo Russell got a lot of attention early, totally deserved, definitely a lot of progress there, especially offensively. And so we talked about him last time, I think. But those are some of the.
Can you take me through the summer league title game?
Oh God, it was great. Well, so here's the thing, like every day was just this cycle of going to the gym and being like, oh my God, like I have to sit through all these games again. Why am I doing this? Do I ever give myself a day off? No. And then finally you get to Monday and it's like, it was a pretty busy day because it was the first day of USA basketball practice. So like that was like breakfast basically. And then, you know,
where Draymond's do they do that in Cox Pavilion?
No, it's at the Mendenhall Center. So it's like the UNLV's practice gym is like adjacent to the two basketball courts that they use for summer league. So it's all sort of one compound. It's very convenient. And the new practice facility, by the way, is spectacular. But, you know, like two courts side by side, super clean. It's only a few years old. They did a really nice job with it. So you're already kind of tired. Draymond's talking about his arrest in Michigan. You've got Kevin Durant talking about, you know, how he's not speaking with Russell Westbrook. I mean, there's a lot going on, right? And then all of a sudden they're like, oh, by the way, we're going to play the Summer League title game right in the middle of your night.
The Super Bowl is tonight.
Exactly. And the Republican National Convention was kicking off. So your Twitter was just going ablaze.
That's right.
But it turned out to be a great game. I mean, Denzel Valentine hit three shots all night. One of them forced OT. on an unbelievable play design from Bulls assistant Pete Myers. So I don't know who his agent is, but I'm sure his agent's just like emailing that video clip to every single team who might have a head coaching opening here in the next couple of years, saying, look what this guy did with the pressure on. And then, you know, Tyus Jones hits this deep three right back. And then you get into overtime and you think it's just going back and forth. There was like five potential game winners in this game. And then the very last shot was just a completely junk, like turnaround from the elbow again by Denzel Valentine. Hasn't hit anything all night. It goes in, great celebration. Crowd's going nuts. His parents are there. Just like way, way more fun and way more entertaining.
Just like you dream of as a kid, you know, in your driveway, hitting the game winner in summer league.
Oh, well, did you hear his post-game quotes? Because you're going to love this.
I didn't.
He's like, oh, well, the people who say summer league doesn't matter never won summer league.
That's great. Good for Denzel Valentine.
It was awesome. Now, apparently they told him yesterday at practice that Dwayne Wade had seen the shot and was like pretty excited about it and was tweeting about it or whatever.
Yeah.
And he was like, it was like the greatest day of Denzel Valentine's life. Apparently like broke out into a huge smile. I was really excited about it. So that's cool, man. Like, I like that these guys are caring more about it. Like, I want summer league to become an even bigger deal. It'd be great.
Totally. And I'm happy for Denzel Valentine because I feel like his actual life in the regular season is going to be a little bit rougher with the with the aging, pissed off Bulls. But
it's all downhill from here.
This was his moment. This was his moment. I was talking to somebody with the Bulls last week, and they were talking about how most years they stay through they only stay as long as their team is alive in summer league. But this year, for some reason, the guy I was talking to was booked through Tuesday. So he was like, screw it. If I have to stay in Vegas through Tuesday, like, we might as well win this whole tournament. And I'm happy for him. That actually worked out. So shout out to my Bulls friend. And, you know, beyond that, I don't really have a whole lot more on summer league. Although I am curious whether you think Tyus Jones can be like a capable guard in the league. Like, was this sort of like a flash in the pan summer league type thing? Nate Robinson, Josh Selby, like, or are we talking about somebody who could actually help the Wolves?
Well, the opinion around the gym was very mixed on that question. I was kind of anti-Tyus last year, and I'm a little bit worried that I'm letting that initial opinion kind of cloud my judgment. It was sort of like, no matter what he did, I was like, yeah, no, he's still not going to make it. He's still not going to make it. But he had a very convincing run. I mean, they lost their first three games. They were the worst seed in the entire tournament, number 24 out of 24, because they got smoked so badly early on.
Yeah.
And then he basically just won like four straight games, and he was the guy who did it.
And he was good at Duke. Like, he more than anyone else, is responsible for that national title.
Well, head-to-head, he killed Ulis. I mean, really, really took it to him in the semifinals. Yeah, so I don't know how much you want to take from that. I mean, these guys were also playing so many games in such a short period of time. That's the one downside about the playoffs, is like, if you make it all the way to the end, you're playing like four games in five nights or something like that, which seems kind of unfair. And the title game was the third game in three nights. So that's not great. But I think from the standpoint of, if you're the Timberwolves and Chris Dunn goes down to injury halfway through the tournament and Tyus Jones gives you, you know, carries you basically the rest of the way, you've got to be happy that you had two point guards play well. I mean, that's pretty much a dream scenario, and that potentially sets up, you know, Ricky Rubio trades if you look forward a little bit.
That's kind of what I'm wondering is how quickly has he progressed, and how will that affect Rubio? I want Tibbs to give Rubio a shot with the current Wolves. Like, just give it a year, because I feel like we've all been waiting for Rubio to turn the corner for like it feels like 5 years now, and this he's finally got the right situation. Like, I want him to get a real shot with them.
So what do you think he can do to make it work? Like, what's the situation where he turns the corner? Like, what are you looking for from
him? I'm looking for him to lead them to like a six seed, and I also feel like shooting above like 30% is going to be key on jump shots. But for the most part, I think play an entire year and stay healthy and lead them to like the middle of the pack in the West.
It's pretty wide open down there, isn't it? Like, exactly. When you're looking at the landscape,
there are people who, I mean, I was actually sort of conservative early on. I was talking to people in Vegas saying like, you know, I don't want to get too excited about the Wolves, but like the West, past those first four or five teams, it gets real wide open and the Wolves should be better. Like they were leaving 10 wins on the table last year with Sam Mitchell. And now like throw in Tibbs plus a year of development, like they could be really good.
Yeah, and Rubio is focused on that. I mean, he told me last summer when I did an interview with him, like he was just playoffs, playoffs, playoffs was all his talk. And so they're not running away from it at all. And you know Tibbs is going to be going all out for it. It was also kind of funny that the championship game of Summer League was the Tibbs Bowl between the Timberwolves and the Bulls. And I don't know, it would have been funny if the Bulls had lost that. But
last summer, they had the last lap. So I left on Friday to go to Chicago for a bachelor party. And during the day Saturday, we all went out to a Cubs game and then went out in like Wrigleyville afterwards and had been out for like 7 or 8 hours, went back to a buddy's apartment. And I requested to put on the Bulls Wizards Summer League playoff game. And there were about 15 other people there. And the entire room just goes like, are you kidding me, Sharp? Like, get out of here. You need help. And they were right. We watched about 30 seconds of Kelly Oubre and Nate Walters versus Denzel Valentine. And I was like, you know what? You're right. It's time to take a step back. And we put on some, like, extreme sports.
Well, Kelly Oubre had a really bad game that I watched him, it really made me just like, oh God. But he actually, his numbers overall for the week were pretty good. I think he got all tournament team. I might have been second team. So, I mean, I think you should be really excited about the future of the Wizards. I think he's the answer.
That was kind of my issue, actually. It's like I started watching and I was like, I don't know if I can take a whole, like an entire second half of Kelly Oubre. And we'll see with, as far as the Wizard concerned, like it's going to really depend on either Oubre or Otto, like taking a step forward this year. And I don't have a lot of faith, but I'm willing to believe. I met Scott Brooks in Vegas, which, I mean, he was delightful in person. I immediately felt guilty for how mean I was about the hiring. So, you know, we'll see. I'm ready to believe in the Wiz, but the summer Wiz is a bridge too far for me. I think that's what I found out this weekend.
When you just said you needed one of those two guys to take a step forward, I was just hearing Minnesota fans saying, we just need Wesley Johnson or Johnny Cunningham. We just need one of those two.
Oh, Minnesota should really have to give up Chris Dunn. It's bullshit that they get Chris Dunn in addition to Wiggins and Towns. And Levine. Levine is their guy, is their wild card. Chris Dunn is too much.
By the way, he's here in Las Vegas getting, from what I've heard, just the buzz. Like, he's been getting some pretty good love from the coaching staff, and he's locked in, and Tibbs is there too, right? So he's probably trying to make a good first impression, trying to stick around with the young pups. So
Tibbs, that's good. Tibbs is the type of guy who really could take his career and put him on like an entirely different level.
I would love it because it needs to go there. Yeah, that's all I'm going to say on that.
Levine really seems like he could be in that sort of Nick Young, like famous, but like deeply mediocre category. Or Tibbs could take him and like, if you teach him to play defense, like that's a really valuable dude just from threes and dunks alone. And then if you can sort of build out his game a little bit, like as a fourth star, it's a good problem to have anyways.
For sure. Like, and it's a narrow role for him too, right? Like all the heavy lifting is going to be done by other people. So if he can really be a star in that role, like that takes them to a different level.
Yeah. We're hitting a point where the Wolves are about to look like incredibly unfair, but well, we should move on. Take me through the Team USA trials real quick. We've got 10 minutes here. What do you think so far? What are your first impressions?
Well, you're a big Coach K guy, right?
The biggest. He's just everything that's right in sports starts with Coach Mike Krzyzewski.
Well, so he just had an interesting kind of back and forth with the media on day one. So you know how it goes. I mean, you got dozens of writers at this thing, right? And all of them, a lot of times, they're looking for local angles. So they're just going to ask questions about an individual player. How did this guy look? What do you think of this guy? Because they want the Coach K soundbite. You know, I mean, what's better for I don't know, you know, pick your prospect, you know, Denver, what's better for Denver than Coach K saying, oh, Gary Harris, great shooter. Like, you know, if he just says that, it's like gold for the local TV.
They should, so, they should be looking for the Coach Tibbs soundbite.
So this is starting to play out. And then somebody asked him about DeMar DeRozan. And DeMar DeRozan's not one of the select team members. He's actually on the dream team. And Coach K goes, look, I'm not going to play elementary school teacher where I just tell you how each one of your kids is doing, okay? And there's just like stunned silence. And I'm like, well, someone needs to ask a question here. So I just kind of decide, okay, well, I'm just going to go for the Draymond question because no one else is asking it. Like, there's this whole, you know, legal situation in Michigan. Like, this needs to be addressed. Like, what's USA's stance on this, right?
Right.
So he kind of turns over to me and he's like, and I'm like, okay, so, you know, Draymond with the off-court incident in Michigan, sort of, what's going on with that? And as soon as I say the word Draymond Green, he just says, no, I'm not going to address these guys one by one. So then I have to like come back at him. And I'm like, no, I'm not asking just about a random player. I'm asking about the player who was arrested for assault
10 days ago. Yeah.
Arrested for assault, who supposedly was going to have some sort of a hearing that he had to go to in Michigan, which I guess got delayed. And there was questions about, is he going to be able to get cleared to leave the country? I'm asking about that guy. And then like the light kind of goes off in Coach K's head. And he's like, oh, God, I remember now. And he's like, so then he goes into his spiel, you know, his normal spiel about, oh, I'll definitely answer that. My fault. And you know, he goes on about, you know, how Draymond apologized. And then he very weirdly said, when I asked, was there going to be any punishment? He said, no, because we've already hung him by his thumbs for 2 hours last night.
I enjoy the humor. That's all good.
Isn't that a little weird? Like,
yeah, that's some Game of Thrones, Ramsay Bolton type stuff.
That's USA basketball in a nutshell. It's Coach K is the god. And I think they realize they're really good. And I think more seriously, like their whole thing they're preaching is defense. I think they look at it like DeAndre, Draymond, Kevin Durant, Paul George, and Jimmy Butler. If you have those guys on your team, nobody's going to score on you. So forget about it.
I'm so excited for the days. Well, I think what Popovich takes over in 2018, right?
Yeah, this next cycle. So I guess the theory is that basically this is it for Coach K. And then Popovich just kind of steps in and he'll be the coach for.
I can't wait. To just salute USA basketball with Pop in charge, because it's really been tough to watch like the return to glory under Coach K. And at the same time, Duke's recruiting has gotten so much better since 2008. Well, like,
they're loaded with Duke guys there. I mean,
it's really, really tough this year. I think they have Harry Giles and I think it's Jason Tatum. Are any of the young guys in Vegas?
No, I mean, the select team is basically, as far as I know, all NBA guys. I don't know if they snuck on a college guy or not, but no, it's a really deep pool of
that's right.
Young guys.
I think the
too.
U18 team is in Chile right now. But so what about, has there been any interaction with the select team?
Well, we get to see, you know, slight scrimmages. So they go 5-on-5, and Klay Thompson had a hilarious quote yesterday. He's like, look, it's so nice to be on the dream team side of this, because when I was on the select team, they used to kick our ass every single day. And it was so humiliating. That was basically what he said. But I thought the best interaction really wouldn't have anything to do with being on the court.
Yeah.
You know, Kevin Durant comes out yesterday. He's asked about Brandon Ingram, obviously the guy he's been getting comp to for what, months? And you know, some people would say that's unfair. And I probably agree with that. But Durant, his quote was, he reminds me of himself. He's a little farther along than I was at that stage. He's with a great organization. He's a great player. I watched almost every single one of his games this season. He's the first person that I can look in the mirror and say I can see myself looking back. I'm rooting for him. He's more fluid than I was as far as skill-wise. He's more advanced than I was. I was just running and jumping and shooting threes at his age. He could put the ball on the floor, change directions, get to the rim, shoot pull-up threes. I mean, if you're a Lakers fan, isn't that the best moment of the post-Kobe era so far?
that cements a great two-week span for Lakers fans in Vegas. Is the Durant seal of approval. Yeah, that's wild. I can't believe he said all that.
No, I know. That's not really KD, right? I mean, KD is like generically positive, but he does not go out of his way to praise people. So I thought
And for the record, I think Durant was further along than Ingram is now. Like Durant was straight up murdering people at Texas.
Yeah, I agree. I think the one part that he was focusing on to me that kind of came up was the handle, right? Yeah, and I do think like KD's handle came a long way in the NBA. I mean, people forget like that rookie year. I mean, he's basically just kind of a shooter, right?
Yeah.
You know, just kind of standstill shooter, maybe one dribble left to right. Like he was not breaking people down. And I remember, what was it, year two or year three, once they were in Oklahoma City, where all of a sudden this guy's just attacking everybody off the dribble, going both directions, crossovers through the legs. And it was like, oh my God, what happened? And I think that's probably why he was saying that. But I agree with you. I mean, from a prospect standpoint, Durant was significantly ahead.
Yeah. So what do you think of the rest of the team?
Well, I mean, clearly you're missing LeBron, you're missing Steph. And so it really becomes Durant's team. And he's the face of it. He's got the biggest media scrums. I wrote a long piece about him today. I mean, there was almost a fight between two reporters yesterday over who would get to ask the question to Durant. He did a great job playing kind of official or peacemaker. So he's the story here. I mean, he really has kind of changed the whole atmosphere and everything just because, you know, he went to Golden State. You talk to Draymond, Clay, these guys still can't wrap their minds around the idea that he's actually on their team because he's the best player.
None of us can.
Yeah. And they're right there in the boat with us, which I think is just great. And, you know, Clay was talking about how he can't wait to get to training camp so he can be in the same gym with Steph and KD at the same time so he can steal both of their moves and get better. And, you know, Draymond is just typical Draymond, very high energy. And, you know, they actually look at it like they're trying to get a head start on the rest of the NBA because they're getting to spend basically a month together learning each other, those three.
Yeah.
And I think that's a pretty good point. Like, we should be preparing for a really strong start for the Warriors season, not only because of just their overall talent level, but because they're going to have basically a month of games and practices to get used to each other.
Yeah, well, they're also going to spend the next month recruiting Jimmy Butler and Boogie and really come in ready to go. You know, they need a little depth now that they lost Barnes. So here's my thing with Team USA's roster. I really think that if you took off DeMar DeRozan and Harrison Barnes, it would make the whole team look more impressive.
Well, certainly take off Harrison Barnes' shoes. I mean, I don't know what he's wearing, but
I haven't seen his shoes. What he's Adidas, right?
Yeah, not safe for work. Like, don't Google in the office.
Okay, nice.
No, I'm mostly joking, but no, I agree. Well, here's one question for you, because the point guard position is sort of the one thing that people are kind of dissecting with this roster, because they've got Kyrie and they've got Lowry.
Yeah,
but they don't have CP3, Russ, Steph. I mean, like, Damian Lillard, John Wall. Like, there's a lot of really good point guards they don't have. So the idea kind of got floated yesterday. It's like, well, what if they just don't play with a point guard? What if their idea is like, well, we've got Draymond, we've got KD, they can both handle. Paul George can handle a little bit. What if your like best five guys is DeAndre Jordan, Draymond, Kevin Durant, Paul George, and Jimmy Butler? Like, what if that's your lineup? Like, what would you even do against that if you're a foreign country? I don't know if you'd get past half court. And you wouldn't get within 10 feet of the hoop. So, I mean, they can just do so many different things going big and going small that nobody else is going to be able to really handle.
Yeah, I feel like the swing guy who would be most likely to work as a point guard is Jimmy Butler. And just throw him in the backcourt with, like, Clay, Kevin Durant, Draymond, and Boogie. A front line of Draymond and Boogie is going to be quite something. Like, they're over under for technicals is like 8.5 over 2 weeks.
Well, and here's another thing about Boogie for the Boogie fans out there, because I know there's a lot of them. He threw about an 80-foot outlet pass on a dime for a layup, like just turned and whipped it like, you know, Kevin Love style, quote unquote. And it was like probably the most impressive thing of the entire scrimmage. I mean, bam, like, you know, on a laser. So somebody please save him, I think is the message.
So last thing I saw someone on Twitter raise a point or raise the question. If guys were healthy and everyone was playing on Team USA this year, would this be the best Team USA ever?
Well, you know me, I'm always going to default to Jordan. So I would say the original dream team. But if you had the top 12 guys, I mean, the 12 guys who aren't here, I did a little piece for the magazine in the scorecard section. Like, the 12 guys who aren't here are better cumulatively than the 12 guys who are here.
Right.
And I actually think a better way to frame this is that, could the United States field three teams that would win gold, silver, and bronze at the Olympics? And I actually think that we could. And part of my argument is this. 24 of the top 25 in SI's top 100 last year were American. Uh-huh. The only one who wasn't was Marc Gasol, and Marc Gasol is not playing. So, you know, if you're looking at constructing, like, okay, let's make teams out, you know, the top 36 players in the world, probably 32 of them are American. So why wouldn't we be able to, you know, to win all three medals? And I really think the gap this year is bigger compared to the rest of the world than it was in either 08 or 12. And that's even with, you know, our B-plus team, if you want to call it. So,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if we had LeBron, Steph, sorry, I'm saying we as United States, please don't accuse me.
It's the week of the Republican convention. Let your flag fly.
Yeah, I'm actually standing and saluting the flag while I do this podcast, which is really awkward because I'm in my hotel room, but I did bring a flag. No. Yeah, I think that United States would be in a position where if everybody was healthy, that would be a serious conversation. Because remember, Kobe tried to make that conversation happen, especially in I think it was 12, where he really pushed it pretty hard. But this team would blow away that 12 team.
Yeah, well, and I also think that if, like, I would agree that there's no substitute for Jordan. But LeBron is, like, close, at least. And then you look at the depth elsewhere, there's, like, you got, I mean, Steph, Durant, Kawhi, you know, I CP3's right there. It would be, I mean, it just goes to show, like, how loaded the league is generally right now, I think would be the thing. And then your other point, internationally, it has been weird after the whole sort of rush to talk about how globalized basketball has become. It seems like the talent has kind of leveled off around the world.
Totally. And the superstar guys just really aren't coming through. And, you know, Dragon Bender, he's, like, supposed to be kind of next, right? I mean, I think Porzingis probably is the biggest ceiling prospect to come over internationally in quite some time.
Yeah.
But, like, Bender, you know, he was kind of struggling in summer league up and down. I mean, he's definitely a few years away if he's going to get to that level. So, I think that's, you know, a big part of it. Another thing with the dream team, I think a good argument against the dream team, two arguments. One, a lot of those guys were a little bit older, whereas, you know, this year's crop, if they had everybody, would be like all prime 27 to 30, which, you know, that definitely matters in terms of, you know, the historical debate, because you'd rather have the guys a little bit younger. Yeah. And then I think, too, like Christian Laettner, you know, I mean, that's really sucks.
It will always upset me that Christian Laettner was chosen above Shaq, because if you put Shaq in place of Laettner, then you're really talking about, like, 12 of the greatest players ever. And, like, no one is ever touching that team. But Laettner is the vulnerability. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, and we were bagging on DeRozan a little bit earlier. He's kind of the 12th guy on this team, or maybe Barnes is the 12th guy, but I mean, DeRozan is still capable, as he did yesterday, of trailing a fast break. The ball comes back to him and he does a 360 layup in the air in the middle of a scrimmage easily and completed it effortlessly. So, I mean, these guys are still
several steps really above Laettner is what you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah. I think DeMar is going to get the nod over Laettner. Although Harrison Barnes versus Laettner one-on-one would be freaking great. Let's watch that.
Yeah. All right. Well, any final thoughts from Vegas? Are you excited? Are you ready to get out of there?
Yeah, more or less. It's been a really good run. It does kind of feel like things are winding down, which is good, because it was a crazy July, right? It just kind of flew by. But I'm really excited to read your Rio coverage for sure. And as we get closer to that, that's going to be awesome. And I'm excited to see KD in Oakland. I think that's sort of the next thing I have circled. And I believe that's Tuesday night.
Yep.
And we'll go from there.
Speaking of a crazy July, can you believe today is 1 month since LeBron's block? It feels like that was three and a half months ago.
It's also 6 days from Jake Layman's block on Jaylen Brown for the Blazers.
And so many playoffs changed everything.
I, I was saying everyone after the game, I was like, who's going to do the oral history of that block? Because it was great. And oh, everyone was like, dude, you're not, they're like, you're not funny at all. You need to leave.
You're the best. Well, hey, so we are going to take a couple weeks off from the pod, but we will be back either before the Olympics or in the first week of the Olympics. And then we'll be breaking down Team USA as it all gets real from there. And then maybe we turn into a college football podcast in September. Who knows?
I'm ready. Bring it on. Yeah, we'll see how that goes. Probably right, not.
Take it easy. I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for tuning in for another episode of Open Floor. You can follow Andrew Sharp at Andrew Sharp and Ben Golliver at Ben Golliver. You can find the whole SI podcast network at si.com/podcast. Please subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, or your podcast app of choice. And please leave a review if you like what you hear.
Another great edition of Open Floor is in the books. Did you know Locked On has a daily podcast for all 30 NBA teams? If you're a Lakers fan, search Locked On Lakers. A Celtics fan, search Locked On Celtics. Warriors fans, search Locked On Warriors. Yes, all 30 NBA teams have a daily bite-sized podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.